is like, as we talked about the whole Rogue One stuff that's going on, rumors are they're having to reshoot stuff. Some say it's not that much, blah, blah. Now you're getting into it is like, because so much money is invested in these franchises, will studios stop trusting the directors? Hi, and welcome to the episode of Cine Nation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Will Clayton.
And we're alone tonight. We're missing the rest of the gang. They're all either on the Eastern time zone and they're asleep, or they're on the Western time zone, like Ben Gertz, and who has family in town. So, and he's probably in Portland doing Portland things, as Portland people do. I don't know what they do. One day I'll go there and sleep on his couch. I don't know. But anyway, and so Will and I are in the great state of Alabama, where we're waiting to hear if we're going to get a state lottery or not in the next year. Did you hear about that?
Of course.
It's like, I was really excited. I'm going to be honest with you. I was like, yes, we finally do something. Because like Alabama, I think, is the only state that doesn't have a lottery or casinos.
I don't think we're the only state, but I know we're one of the...
We're one of the few. Yeah, we're one of the last few. And, like, it's just been... When I saw that video today of Robert, of the governor, I was just like, thank you. We finally learned that we can actually make some money from this. This could actually help the state economy.
Sure, but it'll never pass right now with his political toxicity, so...
Oh, gosh. I hope it does. I don't know. This is not a political show. I don't know why we're talking about this. Anyway,
other than Robert Bentley videos, what have you been watching lately, Brandon?
What I've been watching, I've said this the past few episodes, I've been watching a lot of stuff because I'm making my thesis film for USC. And as any kind of director or even a writer, anyone that's in film, really, when you're making a film, you try to watch as many films as you can that's trying to like get the tone of what you're doing, or if you're basically you're just trying to steal from them. Is the overall thing. And so like, I've been watching, let me get my list, because the past few weeks I've watched so many movies compared to like what I usually do over the school year. So like I'm currently rewatching Men in Black, which story-wise has nothing to do with my story, but I'm just watching it to see how people handle comedy with directing and cinematography and stuff like that. I watched Superbad for the first time since like high school. There's a movie that I really like that's a big influence, because I'm shooting a camp movie. It takes place at a camp in my hometown, and I've been like watching as many movies that take place outdoors or that take place at a camp. So one of the movies that I watched, it's a little movie called Indian Summer. Have you heard of this movie?
I have not, but my first thought was you're going to say you're watching the entire Friday the 13th franchise. But...
No. I might have to watch Friday the 13th. I don't know. That might want to have to go through and do. Because it's not a horror movie, but it's a comedy. So basically, Indian Summer. I feel you might like Indian Summer. It was Roger Ebert. I think it's Siskel and Ebert. Gave it 2 thumbs up. So it has to be good. So basically... I say it has to be good. Here's the thing. This is going to hold a different rant. But like, if I see a movie, when I was buying movies at certain stores in town in Alabama, if it had like 2 thumbs up, Siskel and Ebert or Ebert and Ropert, I would buy it just off that. Like I really would. If it was like $4.99 and it had that stamp of approval by them, I would buy it, because I tend to agree usually with like how Roger Ebert thinks of certain movies. And so that's like when he passed away, like that's like when, no, I can't really listen to any critics half the time now, because he really, his tastes were the same as mine usually. But so Indian Summer was one of those buys. I bought it at the local movie stop in Tuscaloosa that just actually closed down a few days ago. And so I'm heartbroken. But it's a camp movie. It's a reunion movie. It's a reunion camp movie. This is how I put it. I never went to camp, so like I never got this experience, but basically it's about these, adults who come back to the camp they grew up at with like summer camp they grew up at when they're like in elementary school. and like they're all now in their 30s, and some of them are married or they're in relationships, or it's like almost like a high school reunion, but it's like elementary school kids. And it stars Alan Arkin is the camp owner. And it's Bill Paxton's in it. Diane Lane. Trying to get the Kevin Pollak, who's a great character actor. Kimberly Williams, who is in Father of the Bride, and according to Jim, that's married to Brad Paisley. It's a really good movie. It was directed by Mike Bender, and Mike Bender is a director who did Rain Over Me with Adam Sandler and Don Cheadle. And he did another like favorite movie of a childhood movie of mine called Blank Man with Damon Wayans. But anyway, Indian Summer, it's a really great, this is just my childhood like stuff I'm talking about. No, Indian Summer is a really good film. Like I really enjoy it. It has great acting. It's a fun, like, it's like if you love like those like reunion movies that you come back and like you visit people, like Big Chill. This is like a Big Chill, but set at camp.
Grown Ups.
Yeah. It's like, no, not that. No, not that at all. Like more of the serious kind. And this,
like Dreamcatcher.
What are you talking about? What movies are you? Gosh, no, like Big Chill and oh gosh, Return of the Secaucus 7, which was the John Sayles movie. But Indian Summer, anyway, Indian Summer. It's a great movie, and it's like a very like obscure movie that no one really knows about. Like if you look online, like you can't find any pictures of it really. You can't find any video, but it has like a really great cast. It's shot really, really well. And it's something that it's a movie that no one talks about. I mean, hey, Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel loved it, so like, it has to be good. But that's what I've been watching. And Stand By Me, I watched Stand By Me as well because I had to do that for outdoor stuff. It's been just a long list of movies. I think I've watched like 20 movies in the past 2 weeks. It feels like
there are worse ways to spend.
So anyway, off of my like rant of what I've been watching and things like that, Will, what have you been watching lately?
Well, last time I mentioned I was finishing up or going back through Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I just finished up that whole show, finished up season 8 the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I've been watching, just started watching Vice Principals on HBO.
Okay.
Hilarious. I love Danny McBride and Walton Goggins in this are great. It's very, even only 2 episodes in thus far, mm-hmm. it's hysterical.
You said it's on HBO, right? It's on HBO? Okay. Yeah, and that was shot in South Carolina, and I wish Thomas was here to talk about that because he has some stories about that. It's like I feel like there's gonna be an episode where we just bring Thomas on and we just have him tell all the stories that we've talked about that he has, and it's just a Thomas tells the story, tells some stories episode. That's all it is. But Vice Principal, is it similar? And it's, I mean, it's Danny McBride and it's HBO. Like how. Is it similar at all to Eastbound and Down?
I think so. So it made Eastbound and Down work, you know. I can't remember which writer on Grantland, when Grantland was still with us, put it. But basically that Eastbound and Down was looking at a sort of the inverse of Breaking Bad, whereas Breaking Bad was about a regular man becoming a sort of a legendary figure. Eastbound and Down was about a legendary figure becoming a regular guy, so to speak, with Kenny Powers. And from what I can gather thus far with Vice Principals, imagine sort of that Kenny Powers-esque, brusque character, but with actually like with some serious heart underneath, but very sort of brusque, upfront in your face type of guy, put in a high school as a vice principal, paired off with like a very sort of slimy, snaky, everybody likes secondary vice principal played by Walton Goggins, who plays it perfectly. And that pairing together, I didn't think didn't immediately jump to mind being like, oh yes, this is going to be a good comedy duo.
Yeah.
But both of them together, and of course Jody Hill still directing and writing with Danny McBride, you've got a really potent combination for some really funny stuff.
Walton Goggins has just like gotten really popular lately. Like
Justified.
Yeah, Justified, and then I'm looking at his thing. He was in Hateful Eight, which is the big thing with Tarantino recently. Wait, I did not know he was from Birmingham. Wow. How am I just now finding this out? Okay. That's weird.
Sounds like you have a future interview on your hands there, Mike.
Apparently, yeah. I got caught Walton Goggins and said, hey. he was also, because I saw him in American Ultra, where he's like this, have you seen American Ultra?
I have not.
Do you know what it is, though? Okay, well, it's Jesse Eisenberg, Kristen Stewart, and Jesse Eisenberg, like, come to find out, he's like this, basically it's like, think it's Jason
like,
Bourne.
Wait, this is like the super spy guy, right? But they
super
like,
spy,
try to make
yeah,
it funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, basically it's like Jason Bourne, but it's like Jesse Eisenberg living in a small town. That's basically what it is. And that it's he's a pothead. Like, that's what it is. And it's an okay movie. Like, it's funny. It's a lot more action than comedy to me. But Max Landis wrote it. And because Max Landis got so pissed when it like bombed the box office.
Really?
He's just, yes. He was just like, he's like, apparently America can't take original comedy anymore. Which I feel like is just like a weird thing to say from the guy who wrote it. Like, it just feels like a pretentious thing. Like, well, you don't understand me. And I don't know. That's just a weird thing for me to say. I mean, for him to say. I mean, it made $27 million on a $28 million budget. So it lost money, but not that much. But Walton Goggins was in that movie, to go back to my point, and he plays like a crazy, he's this insane guy who is like Topher Grace's like henchman, basically, and very different than what he is in Hateful Eight, which, and he's great in Hateful Eight. Did you like Hateful Eight? This is a completely different topic.
I loved Hateful Eight. Okay. I was actually intending to write a review on Hateful Eight, but ultimately, the only thing I want to say about that was basically how great of a sort of a screenplay that is. That what made me enjoy it so much is not only just how good of a Western it was, but he basically wrote a whodunit, you know, four people stuck in a room stage play. In that, I said I think this would be great to watch like in theater as well, not just in movies. I thought it was a fantastic.
I agree with that. I think this is like, because he's a dialogue heavy writer, but this was his probably most play like movie.
Yes.
It was just, and I enjoyed it. There were some problems I had with it, but again, it feels more. I think even the ending shows it. It feels like more like a play than a movie. Because like in a play, the ending it has, because I don't want to spoil it, but the ending it has could be an ending of a play.
Yeah.
It's very different for an ending of a movie, because it kind of just like, oh, that's it?
But
with a play, yeah, it kind of trails off. With a play, you can kind of get away with that. Like, that's just kind of how certain plays go. But it's like, because Thomas and I saw it, the roadshow version of it, and like, man, it's when it goes from act, or when it goes to the first half to the second half, the ending of the first half, like, it just sets up the second half so perfectly.
It's brilliant.
It's just, I mean, like,
it's so perfect.
It's almost like a TV in a way. It's like it knows how like to keep you there engaged, even though you had like a break in between.
Yes.
And Tarantino's a guy. He's just a. Ben's not on here to talk about how much he hates him, but I think he's a great. He knows how to write dialogue. He's one of those great. And the thing about his stuff too is, I've said this before, when you're watching a Tarantino movie, you're really never one step ahead of him. He usually is going to take you somewhere that you didn't see it going at all. He usually goes the opposite way, which is really interesting.
Well, think about that for a second, like, with me. Let's explore that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's fine.
Like, think back to when you first watched Hateful Eight, first time you're watching it. Throughout that entire first act, were you just not on sort of pins and needles, nervous the entire time? Like, that at any moment, something's about to go down, right? That just the tension just builds and builds and builds and builds. And for me, it started right from the beginning.
It starts right from the beginning. Well, see, for me, what it's not really it's more the characters he creates. Because, like, right from the beginning, you have characters who are just, like, at odds against one another. Even the people who were friends are like somewhat at odds with one another, and they can't trust one. Like, Kurt Russell doesn't really trust Samuel L. Jackson. Like, they're like coexisting, but they don't trust either, like, any of them. It's like Kurt Russell, it's like, even though he's like Jennifer Jason Leigh are tied together for a long time at one point, they don't really become close. Like, it's so it's like it's everyone's at odds, and that's why when you put them put them into a room like they do, it's there's no one you can no one can really trust anyone. It's almost like I'm gonna compare because the ending is I guess similar. It's almost like it's a very Agatha Christie style of like Murder on the Orient Express.
And then there were
Murder on the Orient Express is a very similar like ending. I say it has a similar ending that as Hateful Eight does. Like the reveal, at least the reveal is very similar.
Yeah. And I'll talk about that too for a second. Did you actually like the? I'm gonna just go ahead and put this out there. Spoiler alert. Did you enjoy that it was the guy off stage that actually, you know, does all the shooting there towards the end? Like, did you like that twist?
Yeah, I did. I personally did. I mean, it's very. The problem is that when you know that guy is in the movie because he's in the credits, like you're just expecting that to kind of happen. But
I kept wondering when he was going to show up. But see, my I actually, as much as I enjoy the movie, that was my one complaint with it, mm-hmm. is because again we talk about it sort of being like a play, like a stage play, mm-hmm. that I personally think it's a weakness in theater and in stage plays when it's the unintroduced character off screen that is the key linchpin to all this that'll eventually just show up there for the final act. Like, I don't like introducing characters in the final act that have like a massive part to play, so to speak. Fair enough. Yeah. But for the movie it works because then they give you the you know the flashback to everything setting up, and that's brilliant. But if I almost wonder, could they still do the play without that scene and without that reveal? Mm-hmm. And I almost wonder if it'd be better or what would happen to it that way, because it's again I'm not saying that the sequence is bad. I think the sequence is fabulous, mm-hmm. and. There's just something about it. I was like, oh, it's going to be a guy off stage. Oh, that's kind of lame. But the way, it all plays out is fantastic.
Yeah, because then you have Tarantino who kind of knows that trope and I feel learns to just accept it and like try to do it in a different. He tries to do it in a different way.
Sure, which is why his character ends the way he ends too. As soon as he pops out from under the stage,
it's like very quickly. Like he's not there long. But it's Channing Tatum. We'll just go. It's Channing Tatum. You should have already watched it. It came out in December. It's been a while. Channing Tatum is because I want to talk about Channing Tatum for a bit because he was actually really good in that movie, even though his role was very small. He's an actor when you watch him in that movie and when you watch him in Hail Caesar. How good he is in supporting roles.
He's great as a bit player.
There's certain actors because they become that huge box office star, and Hollywood tries to push them that way, and you kind of forget how really good they are, like as an actor or actress. It's like I think Chris Pine is another guy who's just like that. Like if you watch Chris Pine, you kind of think of like, oh, Star Trek, or then like he tried to do Jack Ryan at one point, but Chris then Pine.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, Chris Pine to me, like that's a guy who, for some reason, hasn't gotten the quote unquote big break. Like, there's no reason he shouldn't be bigger than he is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because again, yeah, he did the big franchise. He's got the big franchise with Star Trek, and he's fantastic in Star Trek. He's done the small indie pictures. He's done small supporting roles in action flicks. He's done the Disney route with what was it?
Into the Woods.
Princess Diaries 2.
Into the Woods.
I mean, and then was there Finest Hours as well? He's done like everything, and to me with and again if we won't talk about star power also being about your physical appearance as well. There's nothing about Chris Pine that doesn't scream this guy is a massive movie star.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason he's just not gotten, I believe, the recognition that he probably deserves, mm-hmm. both A as an actor, mm-hmm. and B as a this guy can carry a movie.
Yeah, well, so I'm because he was great. I thought he was the best part of Into the Woods. Personally,
yes,
because you saw Into the Woods, right?
Yes, like, I agree. I watched it the other day,
and his song, and that's the thing, because I grew up in theater. Into the Woods was like the first big musical I loved, and so a lot of my friends were just like, "Why is Chris Pine in this movie? Like, everyone had their doubts. It's like, hey, he's just an actor. He can't sing. And then when he does Agony, oh my God. It's the best moment of that entire movie, hands down. And I told my friends, who was like, well, Chris Pine, he's going to be bad. And I go, I just saw it. I'm going to tell you right now, he's the best part. And if you can't say that's truth, then you will not enjoy this movie. Because it's just like, he's phenomenal in that role.
Yeah.
He's just like, he's so good. In that one bit role, and that's like the thing I was saying, is that when you see certain characters in those small roles, you begin to realize why he's so great, why she's so great, and why they got discovered in the first place. It's like, yeah. Another one. This is not a great movie, and people will probably disagree with me on this because it's kind of his type of character. But when you watch the movie Tusk, that Kevin Smith did,
I haven't seen it.
Anyway, spoiler, Johnny Depp's in it. And Johnny Depp plays like this French, like Canadian, like detective. And he's like, cause at a Q&A, they asked Kevin Smith how he directed him. And basically Johnny Depp asked, do you want me to do like a 1 on the scale for French Canadian or all the way to 10, like stereotypical? He's like, go all the way to 10. And so like Johnny Depp just goes berserk in a way with this French Canadian accent. He's really crazy, but it's just like when you put someone like that type of star caliber in a smaller movie in a small role, you begin to realize why they were so great to begin with. And that's what I hope, in all honesty, for Will Smith and Suicide Squad, is because I think Will Smith is a great actor, and I think he's very charismatic. He's fun to watch, but he's been too consumed with being the lead guy, and it's easy when you take that ensemble movie, because that's when people begin to realize why they fell in love with you in the first place. And so that's what I'm hoping with Suicide Squad for him. That's what, in honesty, I think could help, even though people think he's crazy, it could help Tom Cruise a lot more as well, if Tom Cruise did it more. Because, like, Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder, one of his best roles ever. Like, one of his best roles ever. Like, it's hands down. He's so crazy. And same with him in Magnolia. When you see him in these like supporting roles, you get to realize just how great of an actor they are. Because it's difficult, like being a big name, like trying to carry a movie. Like, people don't realize that. But what are some people like you? Because I'm talking about a lot of people.
I agree with you on Tom Cruise. I mean, and the thing I always come back to with Tom Cruise with people is I like Tom Cruise as an action star. He's a believable action star. I enjoy it. Like, he's got the new Jack Reacher film coming out.
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited to see that. I enjoyed the first Jack Reacher film.
So did I. So did I.
And I know a lot of people complained about it, but I thought it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And to talk about him being a great actor, people forget. Just I always go back to A Few Good Men,
mm-hmm.
and A Few Good Men and Eyes Wide Shut to me,
yeah.
are yeah. And oh, of course Collateral. How do I forget? I always forget about Collateral.
So good,
but
Collateral.
Those three movies like prove to me how great of an actor Tom Cruise is. Because think about it, Tom Cruise in the mid-90s with A Few Good Men is having to face off against the biggest basically name still left in Hollywood,
yeah.
Jack Nicholson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And not only does he hold his own, mm-hmm. but holds its own believably.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just it gives you that full dimension of you character that Lieutenant Caffey needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just sort of the unsure and just it's the little ticks in that movie with Cruise that I love. He's good at that.
Yeah.
He's very good at knowing just what to give a scene at any particular.
And even something like Rain Man, when he's going against Dustin Hoffman, like,
yeah.
It's not a showy role, but he is the main character of that movie. That's people kind of forget. It's not Dustin Hoffman. Tom Cruise is the main character of that movie. It's his story, because we're following his journey from how he is at the beginning when he's this pretentious jerk, to a caring, almost kind human being who thinks for others. It's a big arc. It's a very big arc. And people kind of forget that because Dustin Hoffman is so great in his role. But like, and then also you're talking about Cruise. It's been a Tom Cruise episode, it feels like. When you're talking about Eyes Wide Shut and Magnolia, he shot that like a year or two apart. Like,
yeah.
those are vastly different characters. And
he, one of my favorite stories about Eyes Wide Shut, because I'm a huge Kubrick fan.
Mm-hmm.
He, like, it, Kubrick's, to me, one of the top five directors of all time in my book.
Mm-hmm.
And but with Eyes Wide Shut, I remember reading that how much that Cruise just dedicated himself to basically being putty in Kubrick's hands to do whatever he wanted to with him.
Mm-hmm.
It talked about, I think they shot a scene of him just walking through a doorway over like 100 times. Yes. And just like to be willing to do that as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And B, to, again, it also shows just sort of the dedication to the craft as well of acting and filmmaking that Tom Cruise mm-hmm. has, that, like, he's been around the block. You know, he's worked with tons of great actors, and to basically work with, in my opinion, one of the greatest actors of all time, and to survive Stanley Kubrick is mm-hmm. an achievement in and of itself.
Because we actually, Thomas and I had a class recently about USC called Hollywood in the 1990s, and we watched Eyes Wide Shut, and we talked, and actually, surprisingly, that was the first time I'd ever watched it. And
it's a bizarre film.
It's a really, and the thing is, I watched it after we talked about it in class, and I feel like if we didn't talk about it first before watching it, I probably would have hated it, because it's a very dreamlike movie, and like they shot it for 400 days. That's how long it took them for production, and so they did tell a story about how Kubrick shot a scene with Cruise and Sidney Pollack that took 100 takes. And basically 40 or 50 of those takes were just Sidney Pollack walking to the door to open it for Tom Cruise. And that was one thing. And then Tom Cruise also, what Kubrick did was he made them go to counseling. Go to sex therapy is what it was. It was something like that they had to go to because Kubrick wanted to cast a married couple. And so Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise were married at the time, and so he got them. And then one thing he also did was he made it to where when Nicole Kidman was having to shoot her sex scenes, the sex scene she has in the movie, that's like a dream or whatever, he wouldn't let Tom Cruise on set because he wanted him to have basically imagine and be jealous about this. And like really, he really like dug into like what his character was, what these characters were doing and what they were feeling. And the scenes move really weird. Like it's a very dreamlike movie, and the scenes linger. Like they take a while. It's just like sometimes it's just two people talking in a room for like 8 to 10 minutes, and it's crazy. But anyway, it's like so. But yeah,
but that's Kubrick, the mad genius. I mean, that's Kubrick.
We can have another episode too about Kubrick if we need to. Like it's just there are certain movies I love by him and certain movies I don't love as much as others. And that people kind of say are heralded as like some of the greatest movies of all time, and I'm like, I don't know about that one.
Well, we mentioned franchise movies earlier. And sort of trying to hold your own in franchises. I'm curious. Did you watch any of the big trailers coming out of Comic-Con this
weekend? Yes, I did.
Again, take those for what you will. But I don't know about you, but the film that I was most excited about seeing, just from trailer alone,
mm-hmm.
is Wonder Woman.
I agree.
And followed close second by Kong Skull Island. But that's just because it looks like Apocalypse Now with King Kong in it. But Wonder Woman and... I ended up showing it to my dad. He's like, "Wow, this looks fantastic." I said, "Yeah." But a reason I bring that up is because we've talked before, and I've talked a little bit about how I just couldn't stand Batman versus Superman and Man of Steel. But when it comes to franchises, though, I'm hopeful that and with Suicide Squad as well, that we're starting to see DC and Warner Brothers learn a little bit from. A, the feedback they've gotten, and B, the misfires they've made. Because there is, like my dad said it himself, which was, there's so much potential with these superhero stories, right? There's so much you can do, and so many places you can go with it. This is why I like the DC's characters more. They're just so iconic. Mm-hmm. I like the Marvel movies. They're fun, and they're interesting, and the characters are cool. But he didn't know who Iron Man was before the Iron Man movie. He didn't really know about Captain America. He knew the names. He knew Spider-Man. But my dad knew who Batman was, knew who Superman was, knew who Wonder Woman was.
Mm-hmm.
And he has his favorite Batman and his favorite Superman movie. And he's like, "Wow, we're actually getting a Wonder Woman movie, and it looks really good." I said, "Yeah." And so I'm hopeful that we can sort of see more franchise management that ends up better now in the future, at least from the Warner Brothers side of things.
Yeah, I feel, because the trailers I like the most, in all honesty, because out of the DC three they showed. Wonder Woman, Suicide Squad, then Justice League. I wasn't really excited for Justice League, and a lot of people were. And my friend Jonathan kind of said it. He was like, it just looks like Batman going to recruit people, and that's it. That's all that's going on. It's just Batman going around the world trying to get people to join Justice League. And I hope there's one line in the trailer that establishes some type of conflict. And the thing is, it's not even like we're definitely having a fight. It's like, it's Bruce Wayne going like, I think something's coming. It's like it establishes nothing. But the thing is, it was trying to do a Suicide Squad type thing. If you watch it. Because like they learned from Batman vs Superman was that they focused more on the comedy of the movie, because Suicide Squad did more with the comedy of it and this kind of tag team type thing with characters. It had a big response and people liked it. So now I feel like they're trying to do that with Justice League. Because, in all honesty, there was more humor in that Justice League trailer the entire movie of Batman vs. Superman.
Yes. That was one of my... I have a friend of mine at work who's even more into comic books than I am. Like them. He loves the stuff. And he can't stand Zack Snyder's imprint on DC. He can't even watch hardly any DC show or movie that much because he just doesn't think they ever do them very well. So he and I disagreed about that a little bit, but I asked him what he thought about the Justice League trailer, and he's like, you know what, I said, I watched it and two thoughts came to mind. Oh, we're funny now. Oh, woohoo, great. Secondly, that's probably all the funny parts that are in that movie.
Oh well, I hope not.
I mean, and I said, I wouldn't be surprised if that was how it was originally, if then they go back and spend the millions in reshoots to try to make it more lighthearted. But still, it was just so funny to me that DC is... Warner Brothers is trying so desperately to... I know that everyone wants to compare it to Marvel and chasing Marvel. I don't think they need to be chasing Marvel. You have so much there. Marvel's been able to plumb the depths, and Disney's been able to plumb the depths of Marvel's mythos and books. You've got just as much, if not more, in the DC universe. So make stuff that people are interested in wanting to see, and it's not just spectacle, right? And I mean, I talked about this a little bit in the review that I wrote for Star Trek or for Beyond, that I think the reason this Star Trek movie is better than the last two Star Trek movies is because they remember that the most important thing when it comes to beloved franchises is that people love these things because they love the characters. And if you get the characters wrong, and if you don't do anything with them that's fun or develops them in any way, people aren't really going to remember your movie. And people aren't going to really care about your movie. But everyone wanted to see Batman and Superman fight for years. Okay, sure. But people like the debate about who would win the fight more than they want to actually watch the fight. You know, they want to watch Batman and Superman interact with each other. They don't necessarily want to watch them punch each other. So that's what I think that, at least with Star Trek, they remember that, people want to watch Kirk and Spock and everyone interact with each other and solve problems and mysteries. And that's what people want to see out of DC is they want to see the cool action sequences, but tell us why people like Wonder Woman. You know, why is it that why is she a compelling character? Why is Superman compelling? Why do we like Batman? Give us the characters. That's what people want. And if you give us if you make changes, at least make them interesting. And explore it and play with it.
And, like,
and if you do that, I'll stick with you.
And so that's the thing. That was the problem with Batman vs Superman is because it was essentially the same story as Captain America Civil War. And the thing was that Civil War had like 8 years of prep to like build the relationships with the characters. That's what made it impactful. Batman or Clark or Batman and Superman have no relationship before this movie begins. None. And that's what's interesting about the comics is that when they fight, it's not really just two unknowns fighting. It's essentially friends are fighting one another. Like that, it's like I think in the comics at one point it's like Bruce was the best man for Clark or what. Like, it's like they're friends. And yes. That's what makes it so, like, I guess, such a big conflict is that they're friends and they're fighting. Batman vs. Superman is just like, you know what, let's just, it's like, it's just Jesse Eisenberg, it's just Lex Luthor going, I want to see two big people fight. And that's what the movie is. And that's when we lose sight of the characters. And it's because DC, I feel, was rushed to try to make a movie that could top, like, Avengers. Because they're just thinking, well, we have Batman, we have Superman. These are the two biggest, or two of the biggest, comic book heroes of all time. People just want to see them fight. Let's just do that. And so they did. And the thing is, movies take a long time to make.
Yes.
Scripts take a long time to write. So I don't know. It's like that's sometimes nowadays in Hollywood when you watch a movie and you're like, that's what you got after 5 years. It's like, right. It's like, because it, and granted, it's like, I'm not doing that right now. And so it's like, it's easy to coach from the stands in a way. But like I think that's the problem that we're having, and hopefully that's the problem, because everything, we're rushing everything, we're trying to make our money really quick, and we're not spreading it out over time. That's my one problem with the franchises nowadays. Is that every studio has to have at least one or two franchises that we're trying to make our money on each year. It's like if we have Ghostbusters this year, well then next year we'll have James Bond. It's like every studio tries to alternate the years of when they're going to have that big franchise thing in a way. I hope, because going back to the Wonder Woman trailer, I liked Wonder Woman because it felt different. Than the other ones.
Yeah.
That's why I liked about it.
And it looked unique, like, oh, we're doing an actual character story. Here,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's an origin story we haven't seen before. That's the good thing. It's not the
And Chris Pine. There's Chris Pine again.
Chris
Pine,
like,
playing a supporting role. I mean, and is my dad said, "Is that Chris Pine?" I said, "Yeah, it's Chris Pine." He said, "Oh, who's he playing?" I said, "He plays a guy named Steve Trevor. He's sort of a love interest for woman of sorts." So it'll be interesting to see how they play with.
But no, my thing is, you don't want to rush it, because what I like about Wonder Woman, the look of it's great. It feels like. I love period pieces, and I think it's great. Like, because that's one reason why I love Captain America: First Avenger so much. Is because it's a World War II film, and you have Joe Johnston who did The Rocketeer, and he's just doing Rocketeer with Captain America, and I just love the time period of it, and so that's why I'm interested in seeing Wonder Woman, is because it is kind of taking that dark and gritty style, but it's putting it in World War I, which I find interesting. And Patty Jenkins is directing it, and she did some of Game of Thrones. So it's like you have someone who knows how to do action stuff and knows how to handle like the huge period piece. And so it'll be interesting to see. And I think that was the best trailer. Suicide Squad was the second one. But I feel like we're starting to be very repetitive with the Suicide Squad trailers. But their marketing campaign's been really interesting. I haven't seen. I guess they're really trying to make up for Batman vs Superman, and because it's such a new concept, because it's like they're really pressing like the marketing of it. They're getting a 15 to 30 second spot for every character they're releasing online. It feels like. For like unknown characters, they get a 15 second spot, and you just see the two shots we've seen of them already in trailers. And so I'm interested to see how it's going to go down.
I am too. I mean, that's the next big one on my radar that I'm, you know, sort of quietly anxious for. Because I like to see them do well. And the reason being, and I always put it out there, the reason is because I am a comic fan, and I like DC stuff more than I do like Marvel just default in terms of reading. But I've just been burned twice, you know, basically back to back with DC stuff. So. But instead of trying to go more into that, you did mention the other big one that also happened at Comic-Con, but last year, Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, I'm assuming you've seen Ghostbusters.
Yes, I have.
All right, thumbs up or thumbs down? This will start with...
I'm going to say thumbs up because I found it to be a fun movie.
Okay.
I'm going to say that. It's because there are problems with that movie. But at the end of it, I was just like, I had fun. I think it's a. I think it's a forgettable movie. I think in 2 months' time, not many people will be talking about it. But that's not going to downgrade that I had fun watching that movie. And I think it's. It's a weirdly paced movie. Like, the pace of that movie is really weird. Like, it feels like there's a lot of missing pieces. And I like the beginning. I like the opening. I think some CG stuff is really weird. It's just, and this is coming from a guy, but I love Ghostbusters. I worked on a fan web series about Ghostbusters. Like, I am a big fan of it, and I've been it since I was growing up. And I just had fun. Like, there's problems with it. There was, Thomas brought up a good point to me, and I'll say it since he's now on the show, that I agree with the team aspect, is that there's not really any straight guy. Like, everyone's kind of the wild and crazy character. Everyone's trying to be a Bill Murray type character, but there's not that, like, Harold Ramis or even Dan Aykroyd character, or even Ernie Hudson. There's not even that Ernie Hudson character who's, like, really the everyman.
Yeah,
that's what that team is. It's everyone trying to top one another, and that's kind of the one problem with comedy nowadays, with film comedy, is that we're doing a lot of improv, and we're just trying to top each other. Anyway, your thoughts on it? Those are my long rant, winded thoughts on Ghostbusters.
I mean, that's fair.
Uh-huh.
I did not care for this Ghostbusters, and probably for slightly different reasons than a lot of other people that have really hated on it. I didn't hate the movie.
Yeah, I didn't hate it.
I think it's a very forgettable film.
Yes.
Which is what makes it very disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
That, for me, though, like, okay, so the first 20, 30 minutes or so are fine. They're pretty good. You know, I thought they did a decent job of, you know, establishing themselves as their own thing. And I was thinking, oh, you know, this doesn't take place in the same universe. And then I saw the statue of Harold Ramis' Egon, and I was like, oh, well, it does take place in the same universe. Then that makes it slightly lamer than it was. And but then it just sort of, okay, so two other big problems I had with it.
Mm-hmm.
A, you talked about everyone trying to sort of top each other.
Yeah.
And being funny.
Mm-hmm.
My problem with it was you have some legitimately funny actors in this movie. And they just felt so muted and, like, restrained and, like, they had, like, kid gloves on, you know? Like, when Leslie Jones is in your movie, I expect Leslie Jones to go off when she sees some scary ghost stuff, you know? Like, mm-hmm. like when she's running out of the subway when she first sees the first ghost, she's like, oh, forget this! I was like, oh, come on, just let her say it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Say what she really, like, react, let them loose a little bit. You've got Kristen Wiig, who's great at being silly.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, and again, as much as I enjoyed Spy, you mm-hmm. know, oh gosh, her name has all of a sudden just slipped my mind.
Melissa McCarthy.
Thank you. Melissa McCarthy is very funny,
mm-hmm.
you know, but, and she's funnier when she's allowed to be a little raunchy.
Mm-hmm.
So let them, and again, it's because they wanted the PG-13 rating,
mm-hmm.
but if you've got these funny people, they're funny when they're a little raunchy, coarse, a little vulgar.
Yeah.
Let them be coarse and vulgar. I don't care if it's a rated R Ghostbusters film. Funny is funny. And if you're trying to make a funny film with some horror elements, well, then mm-hmm. it better be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And there just wasn't enough there for me. I had a couple of chuckles here and there. I mean, mm-hmm. mostly involving Kate McKinnon because she steals every scene she's in.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a little distractingly. And then
I agree with that. I agree with that.
And then Kevin, as a character, was sometimes funny and then sometimes really annoying.
Which that I the reason for the Chris Hemsworth, because people are like, certain men, because I want to go off of this, because this is, because certain people are like, hate the movie because they're misogynistic and they're like, I don't want women being Ghostbusters. That's not what we're talking about at all.
No, that's very, very.
And because certain men were like, well, I don't like that the only male character in that movie is just eye candy. And like you're like, well, that's the joke, because most female characters in studio films, they don't give female characters any development or depth, or it's just the girlfriend or the secretary or whatever.
Whatever.
And so that's the point of that joke.
And I was fine with that. I thought it worked well. I didn't think it was as funny as it could have been. I think they could have made it funnier. But Yeah, so it was too tame. I thought the humor was too tame.
Okay.
And then the second half of the film, like as soon as they leave the rock and roll concert,
mm-hmm.
just takes this massive tonal and like structure shift that we were doing our own thing, you know, we were sort of establishing this sort of new Ghostbusters idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then we basically just replay the last half of the first Ghost of the original Ghostbusters movie.
Mm-hmm.
And but we don't do it nearly as well, and it's not nearly as memorable. And then when the final thing happens and everything goes back to normal, it's like, so nothing mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt had no impact whatsoever to me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the ghosts had some interesting designs, but they never had any like real character to them. They didn't really have anything to make you stand out to identify them other than, oh, look, you know, there's Ghost Lay that pukes on you, there's electrocuted guy. They didn't have any feel to them. You know, they didn't feel like they were established. You know, at least original Ghostbusters, they tried to at least go into the backstory of the ghost a little bit, you know, give a little background information or, make them feel more than just, you know, CGI particles. And the villain was awful. And forgettable. Was it Rowan was his name?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, like, for a second there I thought we were going to do something cool, like, oh, he's actually like a pawn of, you know, just, you know, bring something back or make up something different. No, but he's just a dude who read a book who figured out how to make, basically, ghost bombs.
Yeah.
And wanted to blow himself up in New York up.
It's like this guy's a bellhop at a hotel, but man, he's a mad genius because he's able to design all these ghost bombs and like create this entire plan to take over the city as a bellhop at a hotel in the basement. It's crazy. It's like, but like I said, I found, because there are problems with it, but I guess it's like, I walked out like, okay, I don't feel terrible. Like, it might be because I had very low expectations going in, because I did, I'll be honest with you. I'm a fan of Ghostbusters, so I kind of came in like, I'm not going to like this movie. But I enjoyed it. But it's like, I probably won't watch it again. But it was a fun movie, and but my big beef with the entire film is that it does not, it goes into a separate universe, which I don't like.
Yeah,
but they have so many callbacks to the original movies that you might as well just keep it in the same universe.
That was what I was hoping. Like I was really hoping that when Bill Murray shows up for his cameo, when he actually walks into their office, was going to like reveal like, yeah, I'm not actually such and such a critic that we've been, you know, suppressed by the government. We're trying to keep things secret, but you know, we totally agree and are cool with what you're doing, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like I was really hoping we'd get that, but again, there's lots of things I would have liked to have seen that we didn't get.
But it's like, if I almost feel like it'd be more interesting to keep it in the same universe, than it would be to reboot it. Because the reason why is because when they reboot it, it feels weird. Because they're like, no one believes in ghosts. And I'm just like, it's 2016. There are so many ghost shows on TV right now.
Right.
That like it's totally believable that someone believes in ghosts. Like that's not, but in the 80s when that wasn't a big thing until like with ghost shows on televisions. Now it's like you got Ghost Hunters, you got Ghost Stories, you got Ghost Adventures, you have all these
ghost
different
international.
Yeah, you have all these different things. So it made no sense of like, oh, ghosts aren't real. I'm like, but we have like 20 shows on television right now that say they are. So that part at the beginning didn't make sense. That's why I felt like it'd be interesting if it's like. And you could almost go in a weird way of like a meta way of like the franchise being dormant for so long, and it's all of a sudden comes back. And instead, it's like let's just start over and pretend that stuff never happened. That's my big problem with it. But go ahead.
Yeah, and top that off, then sort of finish this up would be, I think if you've got a classic, mm-hmm. I think it's a bad decision to touch classics in general, number one.
Yeah.
Which brings me into the last thing I'd like us to talk about, Ben-Hur. Now, I did not know this existed.
Yeah, it does.
Until I saw a trailer for it in, I believe it was Star Trek Beyond. And I about had a stroke. No joke. And my dad and I looked at each other when we were watching, and I was like, are you kidding me? And this is bordering on a cardinal sin. You're going to take one of the most legendary, greatest pictures of movie and filmmaking history,
mm-hmm.
11 Academy Award winning film,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to redo it, make it pretty much an entire CGI fan fest, and focus only on the chariot race,
mm-hmm.
and only put Morgan Freeman in it as your essential star power. What? Who greenlit this? This isn't good. Okay, like, or you don't remake Cleopatra. You don't remake Ben-Hur. Okay, we're talking about movies, epics. Why were they epics? Because they actually built the damn sets. You know, the whole think about the entrance in Cleopatra with her into Rome, pulling mm-hmm. the pyramids and the Sphinx out with hundreds of extras. Mm-hmm. Like, they built that set. You know, mm-hmm. they spent millions of dollars. If you compare their like production costs like from then to today, it's ridiculous how much money they spent on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were long movies. They gave you character. They made it an actual epic.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to boil it down, or at least from the trailer, what they're doing, this Ben-Hur movie, to just, oh, we're going to have a great chariot race. It's like, well, no, that wasn't the point. And it's just such a bad decision. Like, mm-hmm. I was so depressed like after watching that trailer. Thank God Star Trek Beyond was great, because it cheered me right up. But, but I was just like, what are you thinking? Like, you're going to remake Ben-Hur?
Now, granted,
it's like remake. Oh, we're going to remake Citizen Kane, you know, and that's what we're going to do. It's a legendary picture. We own the rights to. It's not going to cost us any money to write a new script. We'll just redo the movie. Why? It's like classics are classics for a reason. You know, there's certain things you just don't touch, and in my opinion, Ben-Hur is one of them. And so is kind of the first Ghostbusters. At least if mm-hmm. this is what our product was that we got out of the Ghostbusters relaunch.
Yeah. Now, granted, Ben-Hur was also a remake to begin with. I just want to clarify. I just want to state that.
Sure.
Yeah.
However, the thing they were remaking
was a silent movie. That was a very different style movie.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And was it was okay. It's not great, mm-hmm. but the movie they made is legend. It sounds ridiculous to me to have to, again, it feels weird having to spell it out, but I know that lots of folks aren't familiar with these old Hollywood classics and epics.
Yeah.
But, like, when you have an appreciation for film and film history, the very idea should almost be offensive to you mm-hmm. to say, we're going to take a movie that has been so impactful and had such a massive mark
mm-hmm.
in movie history, and we're going to remake it. It just should bother you. Like, what are we going to do? Like, remake The Godfather and...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, well, too bad James Gandolfini is dead. Like, so who's going to play Don Corleone in a remake of The Godfather? Like, how are you going to do that? And why would you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just boggles me that people would want to do that, and that they actually do.
And see, I'm bringing up, too, going off of Ghostbusters, because since we're talking, I want to bring this up. It's also, because this is kind of the topic that I want to talk on for some of the episode, and we'll finish it up at the very end. But Ghostbusters has made $91 million so far in the U.S. Its budget is $144 million production. And so it's only made $128 million worldwide. And it's banned in China, so it won't be even shown in China, which is the big like moneymaker nowadays.
Why was it banned in China?
I don't know. Some
people, what was in it that would make one think that it wouldn't be...
Some people say because it's all women is what I've heard, which I think is just like...
That sounds like a cop.
If that's the reason why, it's crazy. But what I want to say is that... So it's made $91 million in the U.S. And this kind of goes with a question that Ben has asked before, and I want to bring it up again because of Ghostbusters. And then recently with Divergent, for those you don't know, is that Divergent is the kind of the young adult novel adaptation, or the film adaptation of a young adult novel. And they've released 3 movies, I believe, and the third movie just, like, tanked, basically. Like, I think it made money, but it was nowhere in comparison compared to the previous two. Nowhere in and, like, it never really had great reviews, but it always had, like, that money. It always had that box office draw that it was like, we can make another one. And Ben has always asked before, what do you do when you're prepping that franchise and somewhere in the middle of it, it just tanks? what do you do? And so what they did is that they're now making, because they've done three of the movies, and they're planning on four of them. And so it's like, well, what do? We got one more to do. Well, let's just make it a TV movie. And so that's currently what they're doing, is they're going to make it a TV movie, and they're trying to basically almost like that be a backdoor pilot into a TV show. Because they're going to try to combine the current cast with the new cast. And make it, make that go into a TV show. And I'm talking about that, and with Ghostbusters, because Ghostbusters, I noticed, and I didn't know this until I saw the movie, is at the beginning, they basically had established a production company called Ghost Corps that was going to make just Ghostbusters movies. Like, that's how, like, invested they are in this franchise. And so what I'm wondering is that Ghostbusters has made some money, but it hasn't made that much money. What do you think? I know you didn't like the movie that much, but like, what do you think they will do now after all of this?
Honestly, if they even had the ability to do anything, it would probably be a television series.
Mm-hmm.
If they made a, I don't know, if they, I guess you could do a, if they did like sort of an animated TV series again, that could be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure if they're even going to be able to do anything, honestly.
So you do not think they will greenlight a sequel?
I don't think so, and I hope they wouldn't, honestly.
Because they set it up for it to be, there'll be a sequel with the tag at the end, like most franchise movies are doing now. And granted, I want to see a good Ghostbusters movie. I think there's still a franchise there personally. I'd like to see a good one. And I'm not saying this was a bad one. I said it was a fun one. But I feel like my big thing is it needed to stay within the franchise. But I want to throw out these numbers because I think this is kind of eye-opening of kind of how bad this movie's doing compared to the other movies in the franchise. So currently, Ghostbusters has made $91 million in the U.S. The Ghostbusters 1 made $229 million in 1984 in the U.S. That averages out, if it was released today and made that same amount, that means it would make about $589 million at the box office.
Jeez.
So Ghostbusters, if it's released today, and this is, that's kind of apples to oranges in a way, but it would make $589 million in the U.S. today if it was released and made the same amount it made in the 84. And Ghostbusters now is making $91 million. Granted, this is not the final number, but it's still, that's a big gap. Even Ghostbusters 2, which is not well-liked, it made $112 million when it was released, which in 2016 dollars would be $245 million. So even that is almost triple the amount of what this one currently made. So it's like, what do you do to follow up? And the question is, do you do it? It's like, do you pull a Fantastic Four and just go, you know what? Let's just not do this. So I don't know. It's a very interesting thing of because we're getting so many franchises now, some of them will begin to start tanking. What's going to be the next one? Because I feel like they're not all going to make a lot of money. And I feel like, I mean, even this weekend, Ice Age 5, animated film, is a juggernaut series, and it's going to make a ton of money overseas. But so far, it's made $27 million in the U.S. in a week. But the thing is, it's made over $183 million overseas. So it's going to make money overseas, and it's like, it's a movie that's just towards that audience. So it's like, what do we do? What are we going to see? Are we, like, it's franchise, there's a love and hate relationship I have with studio stuff, and sometimes it just becomes very, it's like, with, like I said, every studio has their franchise film now, and I feel like that's now their banner, that's their big thing. And anytime they lose one, like, say, Warner Brothers loses, like, Harry Potter, we gotta find a new one. So now you have new Harry Potter movies. Or Paramount with Transformers. Transformers ended. Well, now let's just actually revamp it and do a fourth one and a fifth one. And then Universal, it's like, well, we have Fast and the Furious. We need something else. How about Warcraft? It's like, And I haven't seen the movie. I can't comment, but I know people hated it. But it's like every studio is fighting for that franchise. And it's... I don't know. It's difficult. And the thing is, like, how... What's going to start happening when some of these start bombing?
They'll try, I think you already said it. They'll try to find something else to take its place.
Well, the thing, I mean, it kind of goes with what Steven Spielberg and Lucas talked about, was that you just need two or three big bombs for a studio, and it could end a studio. Depending on what the studio... If it's Disney, not as much, because they have so much money they're making for movies and other products as well. But it's like, if... I don't know, if you release two $250 million movies and they don't even make half their budget back, what happens? I mean,
yeah, that's a good question.
It's just, I don't know, it's just, because, I mean, now, and we'll bring this topic into it while we wrap up, is like, because we talked about the whole Rogue One stuff that's going on, rumors are they're having to reshoot stuff, some say it's not that much, blah, blah. Now you're getting into it is like, because so much money is invested in these franchises, will studios stop trusting the directors?
Well, that was my big complaint with the reshoots for for that film is that, okay, I get it. It is Star Wars. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. Go ahead and get that out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
But with your main series, your main trilogy, sure, you keep a certain consistent tone and sort of ethos to it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also doing standalone films.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to be its own thing and not even have anything really to do with these main films. And so if you are going to bring in directors to do standalone films, then in my opinion, do whatever you want with it. Mm-hmm. Play with it a little. Like, I was actually kind of looking forward to a possibly a little darker in tone, a little more serious Star Wars film for once.
Mm-hmm.
And because from everything I read, the reason they were doing the reshoots is that it felt too much like a war film and a war movie than a Star Wars movie. I was like, well, okay, I can understand that to a point, but I'd be kind of interested to see what Star Wars would be like as sort of a grittier war film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's inherently wrong, anything wrong with that? I don't think there is. So that with these, I think that studios are going to have to take some risks and take some chances on at least allowing you to play within your genre and within your franchises. Like you said with, like we mentioned before, with the X-Men franchise, that the reason we think the last X-Men wasn't that great is that it's gotten a little stale because we've only had really two voices to tell us X-Men stories. That we need to, which is fine up to a point, but eventually you get bored with it. We'd like to see something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to have seen Star Wars play with different genre types and with different tone, but I guess we're not going to get that now,
we might. We don't know because this is just the internet. You can't believe everything you read on the internet.
Oh, really? Where'd you read that on the internet?
I did. Okay. So it's. I mean, it could because I've heard stuff like it's not that much. Like you can't reach the internet because and also the trailers look awesome.
Awesome.
Like it looks really cool, and I'm really interested in seeing it, and I can't wait for it. So it's like we'll find out, but I mean it's I like what you're saying about the standalone because I feel like it helps them not just expand their universe but expand the style of the universe, which could be really interesting, and that's what I want to see. But let's just wrap this episode up. But so let's talk about some recommendations. So what's some stuff you'd recommend to the listeners currently?
Sure. So if you haven't gotten a chance to see Star Trek Beyond yet, I highly recommend that. If you're a Star Trek fan of the new stuff, I think you'll like it. Or if you were a fan of sort of the classic Star Trek, I think you'll really enjoy this one more than the previous two.
Mm-hmm.
I think Star Trek Beyond is a great entry both into the series and as sort of its own film in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
It tells its own story from beginning, middle, to end. It's complete. Have pretty much no fat on it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend that in theaters. Outside of movies, I would recommend. I've actually been getting into some more comics lately.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading Hellboy and from Dark Horse Comics.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember, I watched the first Hellboy movie the other day again, I was like, yeah, this was actually pretty good back when it still holds up.
Yeah.
So I decided I was going to read the books. So I ordered the first couple volumes of that. Really enjoyed those reads. And I've also been reading DC's Hellblazer, their John Constantine series, which has been a lot of interesting stuff in there too. So that's the stuff I've been looking at and would recommend if you like sort of, if we're, the comics, if the sort of darker, more occult-esque stories and magic and angels and demons sort of thing. It's pretty interesting. I like that sort of stuff. So if you're looking for something a little darker, I definitely give those a shot.
Cool. Now, because I like the Hellboy movies a lot. Like, and what sucks about, because the second one came out the same year as Dark Knight, and that really overshadowed that movie.
Within weeks of each other, if I remember.
Yeah, like it was very close, and it did well, but it didn't do Dark Knight numbers. But and we're still, everyone's holding out for Hellboy 3. And so my stuff, well, the two recommendations I'm going to make, I'm going to recommend Ballers, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, because I love Dwayne The Rock Johnson and whatever he's in. I don't care what people say. I enjoyed Central Intelligence. I thought it was funny. Like, that's what it is. And I think Ballers is a, is, I think it's a fun show, personally. And I haven't caught the new episode, but I love the first, I like the pilot, or the second, the episode one of the second, season two. And I just love The Rock. I will watch The Rock in anything, in all honesty. I haven't seen Tooth Fairy, though, so I can't comment on that.
Is it the second season better than the first? I didn't really care for the first season of the show, so I kind of gave up on it after
two or three episodes.
I love The Rock. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm also a huge Rock fan, but Ballers to me just didn't do much for me. So what is? But is it better in the second season? Is it worth going back?
Well, now you got Andy Garcia in it. Andy Garcia is like the main villain, and I've only seen the first episode of season two, so I've watched season episode two. But basically, like The Rock, basically the season setting up The Rock versus Andy Garcia is what it is, and like they're competing agents, and basically The Rock's going to try to steal Andy Garcia's clients is what it is.
Okay,
I'm interested to see it. Like I said, I'll pay money to watch The Rock and anything. I went to a wrestling event to see The Rock, so like I can't, like I'll do whatever. And the other recommendation, I haven't read it in a while, but since we're talking about comics, I want to recommend a Marvel comic, Hawkeye, by Matt Fraction and David Aja. I think I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Aja, Aja. Okay. It's AJA. Anyway, like that's his last name.
Could be Asia.
Asia. We should call him up. Hawkeye, it's the comic series of that Matt Fraction and David is doing, and it's really great. Like, a friend of mine, Logan, recommended it. I can't remember if I recommended it on the show before, but like I've read two of the volumes of it so far. It's really fun, and it sucks because like we don't really have that Hawkeye in the movies yet, and that's what's so disappointing, because it's really good, and I feel like Jeremy Renner could pull this Hawkeye off, but like they ruined it with Avengers 2 because they gave him a family. And so it takes away this entire storyline they could do from the comic books. So that's my recommendation. If you like it, it's very gritty, and it's also very, very fun. So check that out if you like comics, for sure. But yeah, that's all we have for you this show. Make sure you follow us on Medium. We have a lot of great stuff up there if you want to write for us. Write something and then send it to us. We'll read it, and we'll post it. Right now we got Will's Star Trek Beyond review. Got a couple of great things up there. I don't know if have you been reading any of the stuff we've been putting up recently, Will? I don't know.
I can't remember the last thing I read, but I've been going through it. My office is in a service black hole by my desk. So if I even get anything, it's a rarity. So I normally try to read during lunch breaks and things like that. So I try to get stuff through, but there's always they've always got some good stuff on there too, of interest, should I say?
Yeah. There's a couple things of Stranger Things, the Netflix show, which I haven't watched yet, but I'll recommend it because Hunter loves it.
I keep hearing about it, man, and I haven't gotten to it.
People keep telling me I love it because it has a lot of Spielberg references, which I love Steven Spielberg. So it's like I have to watch this show now.
That was the thing I read about the Super 8. Why the first 10 minutes of Super 8 are good? They're the best part of the movie.
Yeah, Simon Larson. Go ahead.
And I totally agree with the premise of that article too. It's really good.
Yeah, Simon Lund Larson, who we have, he's been doing a lot of great stuff. If he's analyzing a lot of stuff. He did one on Alfred Hitchcock and some of his movies. He's done one on Alien. He's done one on Michael Clayton, The Prestige. A lot of good analysis on there that you guys should check out. And they're almost all under our thing. And we're so glad we landed him. And then Joey Armstrong, he's been doing top 50 greatest animated films. I have to post one actually right now. number 8 and 7. He's been doing a lot of great stuff on there. And Daniel Holliday's been posting some good stuff. Sean Randall, Alex Bauer, make sure to check out their stuff. They're really good stuff. And again, if you want to write for us, write something, send it to us. We'll be glad to post it. Make sure you like us on Facebook. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Cinenation Show. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes and write us a review. We want to hear from you guys. We want to make this show better. And so we want to hear what you guys have to say. So yeah, I think that's it. Will, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Since no one else could do it. And it's been like 2 weeks. And I've been bailing on you so much. And I really apologize for that.
Hey man, it's all good. All I can say is roll tide. Yeah.
Roll tide. And that's how we end the show. Thank you guys for listening. And hopefully you listen to more soon. Bye.